and respectful. On the field, his toughness was almost incomprehensible. His head, as one teammate put it, seemed to be made of steel. But it was hard not to wonder if his body could endure the physical punishment of the game. The standing ovation that he received at the watermelon feed wasn't particularly surprising. Just as he was used to football injuries, he was also used to lavish attention, as was every former Permian player who had once been ordained a star. So many people had come up to him when he was a senior that he couldn't keep track of their names, and it seemed weird how much they knew about him when he knew absolutely nothing about them. During the playoffs, when he had suffered a bruise on his thigh that looked as if it might keep him out of the game the following week, 100 people called the trainer's office to ask about his condition. It got to the point that Trapper, half-joking, half-serious, posted updates on Crow outside the trainer's office. To treat the injury, he had spent almost 3 straight days in the trainer's office and didn't have to go to class. The excuses from class surprised Crow, who would ultimately have to take the SAT college entrance exam 4 times to get over the 700-point combined score that the NCAA required of a would-be college player to qualify for an athletic scholarship without any eligibility restrictions. On the other hand, the courses he was taking were not very difficult, so that academics would create as little interference as possible during the football season, he had taken English and government during summer school. "The teachers understood what they were doing. They respect football," Crow said. "My photography teacher loved Permian football. He said it was okay to miss classes. The other two didn't want me in class because they knew I'd be dripping water from the ice being applied to his thigh." The following week in a playoff game against Denton, Crow had gained 119 yards and scored a touchdown as Permian won 16-3 and advanced to the quarterfinals. After the season, he had spoken to a group of elementary school kids over at Dowling. He read them an Amelia Bedelia children's book. A short time later, he received letters from little boys asking for his autograph and from little girls asking him for dates. "I'm sorry I kept staring at you. I just couldn't help myself. You are so fine," said Casey. "Even though you have trouble reading, I think you read good. I hope that someday you will become a professional football player," said Shauna. "I really enjoyed your reading. It was really interesting when you told everybody how many touchdowns you made," said James. The next burst of applause at the watermelon feed came when it was time to introduce the members of the Permian football team individually. When their names were called, they walked down a narrow aisle separating the cafeteria in half. Ivory Christian acted like a bride at the wedding, each step slow and measured, luxuriating in the applause and the hundreds of eyes beckoning to him. He could have spent hours moving down that 30-foot aisle, for this was the part of the game he truly did love. The attention, the adulation, as far removed as possible from the grit and relentless routine of the practice field. Not everyone was so eager. Mike Winchell walked with his head cocked toward the floor, those furtive, brooding eyes burning holes somewhere, wishing he could be any place but here, in the midst of all this outlandish noise and attention. More than anything in his life, he hated crowds, and his dream was to live by himself near the red-rocked canyons of the Wild Devil's River. And then there was Booby. As Gaines told the crowd that Booby would be the one to fill the shoes of Sean Crow this year, Booby himself felt a certain nervousness and excitement. Booby was never one to praise others, particularly other running backs, but Crow had earned the ultimate compliment from him. "Tell the truth, he's the first white boy I've ever seen run like that," Booby said in his sing-song cadence that sounded like the ruminations of a rap song. "Pretty bad white boy. White that can run like that. Not like Crow. He can run." But Booby wasn't worried about stepping into the role. He knew he could do it. get the ball, tuck it under his arm, and do with a football what Michael Jordan did with a basketball. Make heads turn with a certain cut, so pure, so instinctive, only God could have given it to him. He can fly and dunk all special ways. I can run and fake all special ways, said Booby. He had hardly been a slouch his junior year, scoring 15 touchdowns in addition to gaining over 1,000 yards rushing. But Booby had very much played under the shadow of Crow and spent much of his junior year blocking for him. But no more. He acknowledged the loud applause of the crowd like a prom queen or an Academy Award winner having the first of what would undoubtedly be a lifetime of moments such as these. Exuberant chants of Booby echoed through the room, and the world belonged to him. It also belonged to his uncle, L.V., who sat on one of the little cafeteria stools toward the back, wearing a cap that had Booby's number 35 proudly affixed to the side. When he thought about the two of them, what they had gone through to get here, it was hard not to feel that some miracle had taken place. "We come a long way," was how L.V. said it, with that soft laugh of his. "I guarantee you, we come a long way." But now at last came the payoff. And on this night at the watermelon feed, his nephew walked down the aisle with the flushed, irrepressible confidence of someone absolutely sure of his destiny. The smile wonderful and wide, the gait easy and sweet. Call it cockiness, call it a horrendous case of the big head, but there was no one else like him. "Why are the scores of Permian games so lopsided?" Booby himself had posed the question one day. "Because they only have one Booby." He was right. They only had one Booby. And in 2 days, when Permian went up north to Amarillo for a preseason scrimmage against the Paolo Duro Dons, people would get their first real taste of what he was going to do this season when he, and he alone, was the shining star of the Permian Panthers. Chapter 3 Booby, Part 1 The preseason scrimmage in the late August twilight had barely started when Booby peeled off a run that gave glimpses of why the college recruiters were after him. Why Texas A&M and Nebraska and Houston and all the others routinely crammed his mailbox with heady testimonials to his magnificence. "You have been recommended to us as an outstanding prospective major college student athlete. You had an outstanding junior year at Permian, and I am sure your senior year will be even better. You are in a situation that many young athletes dream about." The entire Houston Cougar football staff has been in the process of putting together the top list of high school senior football players in Texas. "Booby, we feel that you are one of these few select players." "James, we are in New York preparing for the kickoff classic and enjoying the sights. Good luck in your first game. Looking forward to watching you play later this season." They weren't interested in him just because he was big and looked imposing in a football uniform. There were 1,000 kids in Texas who fit that description. It was something else. More than just strength or speed, a kind of invincible fire that burned within him, an unquenchable feeling that no one on that field, no one, was as good as he was. "Miles had the attitude," said former teammate Art Wagner with admiration. "He thought he was the best." He had played his junior year with a kind of seething emotion that sometimes dissolved into quick frustration and discouragement. He easily got rattled, particularly when things weren't going well, and there were times on the field when he seemed as frazzled as a child. But there were other times when that emotion made him spellbinding and untouchable. It had been there during the Abilene High game when he gained 232 yards on 8 carries, and scored touchdowns of 62 yards, 80 yards, and 67 yards. His father, who lived in Houston, had been in the stands that night. They had been separated for some time, and it was the first time James Sr. had ever seen his son play football at Permian. He was almost unprepared for what it felt like to watch his own flesh and blood out there on that field. "Oh, man," he remembered. "The first I seen him carry that ball, he busted that line for 80 yards. Do you know how you feel when you see your son doing good, doing something special? You kind of put a lump in your throat. Man, that boy ran that ball that night." The fire had been there during the Arlington game in the playoffs, after he had come off the field with tears in his eyes because one of the opposing players had called him a nigger. Gaines tried to comfort him and told him the other team only wanted to get him worked up so he would get himself kicked out of the game. And then he saw a change come over Booby, as if something had snapped, the hurt and humiliation giving way to a raging anger. He only carried the ball 12 times that day for 48 yards, but it was his savage blocking that made the recruiters up in the stands take notice. The way he went after the Arlington defenders with uncontrolled vengeance. The way he flattened a linebacker and rendered him semi-unconscious. It proved to them that Booby had more than just the requisite size and speed to play big-time college ball. He had the rawness, the abandon, the unbridled meanness. "He's strong as snot," Mike Winchell said of him. "He's the best football player I've ever seen," said Jared McDougal. Booby himself was well aware that all eyes were poised on him this season, and while he luxuriated in it, he seemed almost carefree about it. Holding court in the trainer's room shortly after the practices had begun in the August heat, he bantered with a 9-year-old son of one of the coaches as if they were best pals in grade school together, calling him Waterbug Head, asking him if he had a girlfriend, grabbing his head and giving him a noogie, telling him that when it came to the shoe, Adidas would never hold a nickel next to the almighty Nike. He lay on one of the brown trainer's tables, but it was impossible for him to keep still. With his head hanging over the table, he ran his fingers along one of the crevices in the wall and started to do a rap tune. He asked one of the student trainers to dial the phone for him and call his girlfriend. The student held the phone out as Booby, shaking with laughter, yelled from across the room, "What's the deal? What's the holdup on coming to the house?" When Trapper walked in, Booby called him Cuz and Cat Daddy. A few minutes later, he was handed a list of defensive plays to study. He looked at it for several seconds, the droning terminology of numbers and letters as appealing as Morse code, and started to read it aloud in rap to give it a little flavor, a little extra pizzazz. He continued to play with the wall and then turned onto his stomach before flipping over again on his back. He spoke in little snatches. "My last year, I want to win state. You get your picture took and a lot of college people look at you. When you get old, you say, you know, I went to state in 1988. He dreamed of making it to the pros, just as long as it wasn't the New York Jets, because he didn't like the color green. And as he flipped onto his stomach one more time, he said he couldn't ever, ever imagine a life without football, because it would be a big zero. Because I don't know. It's just the way I feel. If I had a good job and stuff, I still wouldn't be happy. I want to go pro. That's my dream. Be rookie of the year or something like that." He moved off the line against the Paolo Duro Dons, and everything was in pulsating motion. The legs thrust high, the hips swiveling, the arms pumping, the shoulder pads clapping wildly up and down like the incessant beat of a calypso drum. He went for 15 yards, and it was only a scrimmage, but he wanted more. He always wanted more when he had the ball. Near the sidelines, he planted his left leg to stiff-arm a tackler, but the leg got caught in the artificial turf, and then someone fell on the side of it. And when he got up, he was limping, and could barely put any pressure on it at all. The team doctor, Weldon Butler, ran his fingers up and down the leg, feeling for broken bones. Then he moved to the knee. Booby watched the trail of those fingers, his eyes ablaze and his mouth slightly open. With the tiny voice of a child, he asked Butler how serious it was, how long he would be out. Butler just kept staring at his knee. "You might be out 6-8 weeks," he said quietly, almost in a whisper. Booby jolted upright, as if he was wincing from the force of a shock. "Oh, fuck, man!" "We won't know until we x-ray it. It may be worse if you don't stop moving that leg."
"You can't be serious, man! You got to be full of shit, man!"
Butler said nothing.
"Man, I know you're not talking about any 6 to 8 weeks."
Booby was placed on the red player's bench behind the sideline, and his black high tops were slowly untied. The leg was placed in a black bag filled with ice to help stop the swelling. He turned to Trapper.
"Is it going to fuck up my season, man?" he asked in a terrified whisper.
"I sure hope not," said Trapper. But privately, Trapper's assessment was different. As a trainer, he dealt with knee injuries all the time. His gut told him it was something serious, an injury that might prevent Booby from ever playing football again the way he once had. Booby lay down, and several student managers took off his pads. In his uniform, with all the different pads he fancied, he looked a little like RoboCop. But stripped of all the accoutrements, reduced to a gray shirt soaked with sweat, he had lost his persona. He looked like what he was, an 18-year-old kid who was scared to death.
"I won't be able to play college football, man," said Booby in a whisper, as the sounds of the game and the gauzy light, the hits, the whistles of the officials, the yells of the coaches, floated over him, had no effect on him anymore. "It's real important. It's all I ever wanted to do. I want to make it in the pros. All I wanted to do," he repeated again, "make it to the pros."
When the injury occurred, LV could only watch with silent horror. He had stayed frozen in the stands, not wanting to accept it or confront it, hoping that it would go away after a few nervous moments. But there were too many people around Booby, looking at his knee as if it were a priceless vase with a suddenly discovered crack that had just made it worthless. He had always feared that Booby would be seriously injured one day, but not like this, not in a scrimmage that didn't count for a single statistic, not when he was about to have it all. He had pushed Booby in football and prodded him and refused to let him quit. He did it because he loved him, and he also did it because he saw in his nephew the hopes, the possibilities, the dreams that he had never had in his own life. When he had been a boy growing up in West Texas, back in a tiny town that looked like all the other tiny towns that dotted the plains like little bottle caps, back in the place the whites liked to call Nigger Town. Part 2. From one perspective, the quickest way to understand Crane, Texas was by thumbing through the ad section of the high school yearbook. There, the glossy white pages featured blurbs for T&P Clothiers, headquarters for style and value. Crane Motor Company. Joy and Jimmy exhibit that happiness is owning a Dodge Charger. Crane Flower Shop. Say it with flowers. Let it be ours. Southern Union Gas Company. If you want the job done right, do it with gas. Crane Service Parts. Your Napa jobber is a good man to know. And Gloria's Salon of Beauty. Beauty is our business. It was the kind of town where the big hangout was the Dairy Mart on 6th Street, because it had curb service, where Saturday afternoons meant plunking down a quarter for a matinee at the movie theater on 5th Street, and Saturday nights meant either a dance over at the County Exhibition Hall or a drag or two up and down North Gaston, looking for girls and a little beer. Father's liked Crane.